This is the Goalkeepers Union Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union Podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the networking voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. We are back. How are you?
We are back. 1 week later, we are back.
I know. It hasn't been too long, but it's felt like a lifetime. It has felt like a lifetime. But do you know what? I know we'll talk about my networking ways this week. I have been here, there, and everywhere. In fact, that's not true. I've spent 95% of my time in my office, and I am losing my mind to an extent. But I want to talk about you, first and foremost, because we always do me, the certain voice of goalkeeping. Can I do you the past it presenter? That's got quite a nice ring to it. Or the still dreaming of better days. Again, I can't get a ring to that. But you've got yourself injured, haven't you? You still think you can play a little bit?
I don't think there were better days to dream of, to be fair. But yes, no, I rolled my ankle playing football last night, and I am in absolute agony. Like, absolutely, I couldn't sleep last night. I actually had to wake up in the, well, like, it woke me up in the middle of the night, and I had to get up. I was up at like 3 o'clock because I could not sleep. But it's made me realize that this is nothing, and this is genuine, this is nothing compared to what you guys go through. And when I see pictures, I was thinking about this as I was trying to get back to sleep last night, because I was cursing. I'm not good when things like this happen to me. When I get injured, I get really angry and like, oh, I can't believe it. Why has this happened now? Oh, it's just typical. And then last night, I thought there was a picture. I remember a picture of Murphy Mahoney when he got his injury recently. And there's a picture of him just at his operation. He's posted it on social media, smiling, thumbs up, thanks for all the well wishes. And I'm thinking, wow, this is your career. And you are going to spend a period on the sidelines when you are having such a good season, but you're there with your thumbs up and you're smiling. I actually always think of that picture of you when you had, was it your shoulder operation? You've got the picture from side on where you've got all kinds of cuts and bruises and scars and your arms in a sling, but you're smiling. You're happy. I mean, deep down, you're probably not, but at least you're putting on a front. I can't even put on a front.
No, that is the morphine, Matthew. That is what it does to you. You can't help but smile. Well, look, I've got a few points to raise on this. Firstly, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're 47 years old. You're still trying to get yourself out on the pitch. Just let it go. You know, we're at an age now where exercise consists of swimming. Swimming is safe. Yoga. Yoga is a great form of exercise. Pilates, I'll add that into the mix as well. Just stick to what's safe. Why would you risk rolling an ankle, which now you're going to, and I know what you're like, you will be frustrated, you'll be, I don't know if you feel sorry for yourself, like you say, you're more of an angry person in these situations, I could imagine. I don't think you're going to be like, you know, there sulking, but just very angry with life.
Yes, I'm inclined to agree that maybe it's not the best idea to play football, to be honest. You are correct, because sometimes you go in half-hearted in order to not get injured in some of these games. You play at half pace, but then that defeats the object, because ordinarily that's how you get injured. Funnily enough, actually, just to quickly wrap this up, I occasionally play for a vets team at the weekend. Haven't played for a while, but I went to watch on Saturday. And guess who was playing left back for the opposition?
I mean, there are a lot, I'm guessing it's someone I'll know, and there are a lot of left backs who have retired from football, so I'm not even going to hazard a guess, but go on.
He was a left back / centre back, Thomas Vermaelen.
Ah, wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's a decent calibre, yeah, isn't it? To be fair, there are a lot of ex-pros who play in those leagues, so you tend to come up against some decent opposition on occasions. But it made me realise again, because he had to go off after half an hour, because he pulled his hammy, went in for a ridiculous challenge and pulled his hammy, so he was off. But it made me realise that of all the players you come up against in those leagues, and we'll bring this back to goalkeeping, you never come up against a former goalkeeper. Loads of outfielders. But is it a thing that when a goalkeeper retires, that goalkeeper is very much retired? There's no coming back.
Either that, or they come back and play on pitch.
Right.
Do you know what? And I think it is different because of the nature of the position. Again, I couldn't think of anything worse right now, certainly given the state of my body as well, to go and put myself, because again, being a goalkeeper, you actually think of what, you know, makes you a good goalkeeper, the bravery that you need, and everything else. Like, you're going to come out of the game, and you mentioned your rolled ankle. You're going to come out with so much more, potentially, especially if you get that one-on-one. Like, you know you've got to throw yourself in 50-50. Been a few good examples of that this week, which no doubt we'll touch on in the pod shortly. But yeah, you're going to have to throw yourself in for a 50-50 at some point. You're going to be jostling for crosses. You know, you're going to be throwing yourself full stretch, which that's the other bit that I think people don't appreciate. All goalkeepers will know this. Those first few days of pre-season where suddenly it feels like you've never dived before in your life, and you do that first dive, you wake up the next day and your hips are bruised and your body's bruised. So if you're not doing it regularly to go and put yourself back in goal and do it properly, you just can't do it. Or if you are going to do it, you just got to know that you're going to feel horrific the next day.
So no chance ever of Richard Lee just coming out for a small exhibition game?
No, I did it. And again, I'm sure I've told this story before. I think since I retired, I've put gloves on three times. Two very early on for charity matches. You know, I like to do my bit for charity, Matthew. And then honestly, who is it used to say that? Charity.
You sound a bit like Brent.
Brent. Okay, perfect. And then once more where a client would have lost a loan because he was out for a game. And so I offered my services. Hadn't played for 2 years, but I was like, it's so difficult to get young goalkeepers loans. I thought I'd rather put myself through 90 minutes of football than spend the next week, 2 weeks calling 100 non-league clubs to try and find another loan for this lad. So they accepted my offer. I did step out for Dunstable Town, who were at the time bottom of the league. So it was actually quite a busy evening. Weirdly, though, I did enjoy that. And that was the last time I've ever put gloves on, was to step in for him. And that was about 7 years ago now.
Incredible. One of the many greats to play for Dunstable. Of course, I think George Best played for Dunstable back in the day.
They all talk about, yeah, me and George Best.
Okay, plenty coming up. Shall we get on with the show?
Let's do it.
So in my haste at wanting to crack on with the show, I did neglect to talk about the voice of goalkeeping. Although, quite a nice start to the show, Richard. Quite rare, in fact, that we actually get to talk, you know, man to man on the level. Don't really tend to do that too often. But yes, networking.
Yeah, we're not one for small talk,
no,
are we, really? Which is probably quite an important part of a podcast, really. We probably should add it in from time to time. But no, your ankle that has ballooned up is far more interesting than my networking. But, you know, it's been a good, interesting week, in fact, because obviously I am over here in Dubai at the moment, very much in my office. But the amount of teams that have come over here is staggering. That's the word I'll use, staggering, because, of course, you've got the split Premier League thing going on, 5 games one weekend, 5 games the next weekend. So, of course, you've got 10 teams that each week have had either a period of days off, but a lot have decided to come and get some sun. So you've had the likes of, off the top of my head, I know Arsenal have been here. I didn't actually see anybody from Arsenal. We have Arsenal, I think Bournemouth, some of the Crystal Palace lads were here, but I think that was more of a, they had time off, so they came over. But I did go and meet Wolves, were over here. So when I met with Neil Cutler and a couple of the goalkeepers there, Dan Bentley, there was also Brighton. So met one of the guys there, met with Al Jazeera because I was over in Dubai. So met with a guy called Mike Rigg, who was previously with a lot of clubs back in England, but now the director of football at Al Jazeera. Met with Al Ettifaq. So, of course, the Saudi league doesn't go back until mid-February. So they're in Abu Dhabi at the moment. They're heading over to Dubai for a bit of a training camp in the build-up to the second half of the season. And also met with Ipswich. So that's a slightly unusual one because, of course, they are Championship. But it just so happened that their fixtures fell in such a way where they had, I think, a 10 or 11-day break between games. So they've come out for a short trip to get some training in. And I believe they're playing a game of golf as well today.
Productive meetings.
Yeah, really good. Do you know what? It's nice when, of course, I come back to England all the time and meet with a lot of people when I come back. But of course, it's always really nice when they do come over here in a slightly different environment. Everything around here seems to be sort of 20, 25 minutes away. So it's very productive and good to catch up, get a bit of an idea as to where the different goalkeeping departments are going. And yeah, just to build relationships. Very nice.
Very nice indeed, Richard. Okay, well, we'll crack on with the show. Not too much Premier League action to discuss, of course, because it is, as you alluded to, that kind of weird mini break that they're having, but plenty of EFL action and a bit of FA Cup third round replay stuff too. We'll start in the Premier League. Burnley 1, Luton 1. Simple question, Richard, and I'll come to you for the answer on this question in a moment, but we will go to the Twitter sphere first. Foul or no foul on James Trafford? So we had a few answers into a post that we put out. GK Coach Zero says, I'm quite surprised at how many no foul replies on here. I think it's an obvious foul, clear obstruction. Peter Hucker, no foul, keeper runs into the forward. Baldy, no foul. I know he's young, cost a lot, but he doesn't fill me with confidence. Dan Cohen, not only is it 100% a foul, it is near identical to the one given earlier in the game. The inconsistency from referees is mind-boggling. David Broadbridge from a GK, no foul. Kieran J, foul. He's body checked him, absolutely no intent to win the ball, and he's already looked at Trafford to see where he is, and then he's guided his body in the direction of the keeper without watching the ball. Under the law of the game, that is a foul. It's literally a rule. A few more. JG, no foul. Keeper runs into the crowd. Stay on his line and he collects the header easily. If that's a defender, is this even a conversation? Rory Jenkins, you not think he's misread the flight as he's miles from where the ball landed and thus milked it? Adrian Kajumba, foul. Al Sarpong, not for me. So the Twitter sphere, when we put it out there, Richard, is split.
Yeah, which baffles me. It really does. I mean, do you know what? So I, obviously with the time difference over here, I didn't stay up for this game, went to sleep, but I wake up, obviously early, given the time difference, put on Sky Sports News, I've seen it, I thought, oh my word, people are going to be going crazy over this. Could you imagine if this was, and again, because it's Burnley, and I know this was touched on, it's probably not getting the publicity that it might get if it was one of the other clubs. I was thinking, this is going to go crazy. Like, if VAR, if there's enough complaints about it as it is, this is going to take it off the charts. And then if anything, as you say, it's been completely split. So I start questioning myself. But then I just think as a goalkeeper, any goalkeeper that's seen this, as you say, firstly, the attacker has looked, he's angled his body, as mentioned, no attempt to play the ball. He knows exactly what he's doing and he hasn't even hidden it very well. Even when the ball goes in, he looks around sheepishly like, oh my God, that was a little bit obvious. Yeah, it was just incredible. Incredible. But then again, I'm looking at it, obviously, from a goalkeeper's point of view. You're coming out to take a cross. And if someone's done that, and the thing is with James Trafford, it's really interesting for me. So I think some people might have seen this stat, that James Trafford this season has come for more than double. I think he's come for about 65 crosses. The closest to him is 35, right? So it's something he does. He comes for a lot of crosses. But it's interesting in that I've read a few of the comments and people kind of questioning like, oh, you know, doesn't look great on crosses, etc. He's the most successful goalkeeper in the Premier League in terms of crosses claimed. Percentages are very high, even though he's come for that many crosses. So actually, I'd have that down as one of his super strengths. I think with this, look, he hasn't been able to approach the ball at pace. So he's had to kind of come out that little bit more slowly, but he's still in a good position to then explode and collect the ball, which he would do if that person isn't there. And that person is there because he's meant to be there. He's seen James Trafford. He's angled his body. There is just nothing. If I was in goal, I would be absolutely fuming. I think James Trafford got a booking on the back of this. I'm pretty sure I'm getting a red card on the back of that, for that being given as a goal, because I would have been, my head would have gone. It would have gone. And the fact it's last minute, and the fact it's effectively cost his team a couple of points, I would have felt so hard done by. So yeah, similarly, when I saw it in the morning, I thought it was going to go off massively, and I thought we'd still be talking about this, and everyone just saying it's a joke, and whatever sanctions might then happen thereafter. But it just seems to have sort of semi-died. And even when they got the ref watch on Sky Sports News, like, they basically said, yeah, it's a foul, but, you know, it's one of them where it needs to be an on-field decision. Like, no. Again, if the ref hasn't seen that, how he hasn't seen it, he might not have realised that the striker's gone in with the intention that he has. So that should be where VAR then directs the referee, like, actually, this guy's meant this, and it's very, very obvious. Go and have a look. You'll see that he looks at him. You'll see he angles his body. Doesn't need to be there. He's been there in order to block off the goalkeeper. Just go and have a look at the screen and make the correct decision. And it just didn't happen.
Yeah, quite remarkable, really. I know you mentioned losing your head there. That's one of the things I thought you have to give huge credit to Traff for. He was quite calm throughout. Even after the game, you could just see him kind of just looking up to the heavens thinking, gosh, can't believe this has happened, but didn't really make a massive deal of it.
No, which, yeah, like you say, credit to him. I'm sure that when he got home, and no doubt had been on his mind and probably is still on his mind, because it's, again, it's the roller coaster journey that you go through as a goalkeeper. And and I talk about a decision like this. I've not had anything maybe as bad as this, but I've had a few over the time. And it's just that one where it's that feeling of it's just unfair. You know, it's like, I don't know what I could do differently next time. I've done everything like exactly as I should have done. I'm coming for cross after cross. I would have claimed this cross if it wasn't for the foul. And it's that more that is anything. The fact it's so out of your control. In some ways, you'd almost think that makes it easier, that you can just be like, well, it is what it is. This happens from time to time. But I know personally, and again, goalkeepers listening in, I'm sure you're exactly the same, especially when it's such a big moment. And that is such a big game for them. Could be so costly. Who knows how this all plays out. But of course, they're struggling at the moment. But those 3 points would have been so important for them. No doubt it will have really infuriated him. But as you say, I think he held his cool together and kept his head.
Yep, and worth mentioning, he was very good up to that moment as well. I think you'd say he was man of the match for Burnley. Really good performance from him. Manchester United 2, Tottenham 2, where Roy Keane and Gary Neville were not happy with Andre Onana for the first Spurs equaliser scored by Richarlison. So at half-time, Roy Keane said, "I'd be losing it at my goalkeeper. It's an in-swinger. I don't like where Onana is standing on his line. I'd like him to come and take control of the six-yard box."
Again, it's just a real cliche, uneducated comment, unfortunately, because I think that with this one in particular, and this where it's not black and white, do you know what? If that ball's floated in just a little bit more, then, of course, there is an opportunity. You consider where the goalkeeper's going to start in this position. You're going to be just back of centre of the goal, probably 2 yards out, and then you'd have to travel probably 4 to 5 yards. So if there's a little bit more height, a little bit slower, then, yeah, I think you come and get this. But this is where it isn't black and white. Yeah, the header's 4 yards, but it's the front half of the goal and it's whipped in so flat. I just don't know at which point Onana, how he can kind of navigate his way through the bodies and get there before Richarlison gets his head on it. You know, it's certainly not one that he should come for, and I don't think many Premier League goalkeepers will come for this, and it's the one that you see far too often, that if a goalkeeper does come, isn't able to get there, and then it makes the header even simpler into an empty net. So I think, again, everything needs to be judged on its merits. I've got no doubt that if a Shea Given was sat there, he would have explained and cleared this up very quickly, or, you know, whoever else, other goalkeepers that are hopefully more and more getting involved. But if someone was sat there, they would have explained, look at the trajectory, and they'd have got all their annotations out and looked, at what point can Onana catch this? It's probably the point at which he could have caught it is in line with the front post. So he's going to have to travel, what, 8 yards to get there? And what have you got, a second by the time that it's actually whipped in? So there's just no way that you can get past those players, in front of those players, get at the highest point in order to make the catch or make the punch. I just think it's very, very difficult. But again, very little explanation given this, and it's just a very cliche, header from 4 yards, middle of the goal, got to come for that. Again, every situation is different.
Just to quickly remain on Onana and the fact that he played for United in that game and then travelled to AFCON later that night to potentially play for Cameroon the following day. That didn't happen, which I thought was brilliantly Premier League, the headline that I saw, where Fogg forced his private jet to land 150 miles away from the stadium. Very modern footballer, that, isn't it? But he could miss no games, Onana, depending on how Cameroon do. Alternatively, he could miss up to 4 games, I believe, depending on how they do. So I'd like to talk about Altay Bayindir here, who could be playing his first games for Manchester United. But are you surprised that it's taken this long for him to play those games? Because I looked at that FA Cup tie with Wigan and I was convinced that he would play, even though he's not played a single minute for Manchester United yet this season in the League Cup too. And I get that Erik ten Hag was perhaps using Onana to try and build his confidence in those games, but Bayindir, who they brought in from Fenerbahce, has played some international football towards the end of last year. Bar that, his last appearance in the league competitively for Fenerbahce was in August. So hasn't played a single minute of football for Manchester United. I think one of the reasons that Erik ten Hag used was that he was trying to wait for Bayindir to adapt to the English standard. But I think the only way you get to do that is by playing games, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, and again, it's where I suppose circumstance can take over certain situations. But no, look, I'm quite strong on this, in that I think certainly this being a great example where he may have to step in and play a number of games, and he's coming in cold effectively. You know, that first game is always going to be a massive event for any goalkeeper, playing in front of that crowd, obviously the pressure, the nerves or whatever. Whereas in a perfect world, and this is why you see so many goalkeepers go on loan, for instance, you know, it's a conversation that I have a lot, where you go on loan in order to build yourself up in order to the moment you might play for your parent club. You know, if your first ever appearance is stepping in for your parent club in the Premier League, it can be too much for certain goalkeepers at that time. That's not to say that it won't be further down the line, but then something like this, don't get me wrong, he's obviously got, you know, a decent level of experience. I'm sure he'll be okay. But yeah, if he could have just had a couple of games where you're almost out of the spotlight ever so slightly, just to get your feet under the table at United, and then you're stepping into these, you at least feel like you've got a bit of momentum going into these. So yeah, I do think, you know, and I talk about this a lot, but I think the clubs that do it with a very specific process and they're not guided emotionally, where they have an idea in mind as to, for instance, certainly when it comes to the goalkeeping side of things, the games that the goalkeepers will play, and whether they go good or bad, it's not overly relevant unless it's at a point where you feel like, oh, do you know what? Our number two is actually outperforming our number one. Now might be the time to make the switch. But I think if you kind of go in with the idea that both are going to perform well, these are the games that I want to have for both of them. And then you just know that your number two is ready, if needed, to step in for a period of time like this.
And lastly, in the Premier League, Everton 0, Aston Villa 0. Just a quick one on Emi Martinez. Really good save from Dominic Calvert-Lewin and James Garner. A double save there. But it was picked up on that he was running forward, so with his back to play, but running forwards towards the goal when Dominic Calvert-Lewin started his run towards goal with that one-on-one. Now, I spoke to Colin Barnes, actually, about this. This is coming out on a podcast very soon, and he mentioned the fact that he likes his goalkeepers to run forwards because he believes that when goalkeepers run backwards, they lose their bearings and haven't quite got their position right.
Yeah, it was a fascinating one for me in that, look, he did it perfectly. We got to say, first and foremost, great, great save, and then recovered well to make the next save. But yeah, there is that moment, and you know, I think they even joked about it. Like, had the player shot at the moment that Emi Martinez isn't looking, it probably is quite a simple goal because there's nothing that he can do. But of course, if you're backpedaling, you can only move at a certain pace. Whereas if you turn and run, you can move that much quicker. I always remember, it kind of brings me back to the idea, and this was sort of back in the day where, again, things have changed so much in goalkeeping, where you catch a cross, you'd almost do like a shuffle step sideways and then go to take the cross. And similarly, if you're moving across your goal, it'd be like shuffle, 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 and then try and make the save. And then that soon changed to kind of crossing the legs to then get that extra bit of pace and get that extra bit of explosion. Similarly with the crosses, if anything, it then has become everybody uses that technique, of course, you cross the feet and then you explode off. And similarly with this, if he had a backpedaled, he might not have been able to get far enough back because, of course, if he's 15 yards out, which he might have only got to if it had backpedaled, it does make it quite easy for a player. There's too much room behind you, so it's so much easier then for a player to sidestep you and put it into an empty net. So you have to drop to 6 to 8 yards, ideally. And in this moment, he's realised the only way I can really do this is to run back. And of course, by running back, he can see the goal. So the moment he then turns again, he knows he's in the perfect position. The bit that, of course, is out of your control is if they shoot early. And then, yeah, you're going to have a difficult moment on your hands. But I think in this situation, played it perfectly, got to a good position, spread himself. Similarities with the World Cup save to an extent where he's got his legs very, very wide and covered a good proportion of the goal. And I actually thought the save after that was even better because, again, to collect your thoughts, get yourself back into position, get down low to his left and get enough of a hand on it to go around the post. I thought that was an excellent save.
Good stuff. We should just mention too, I don't know whether you saw this, Edison being dragged off after about 3 minutes of Manchester City's game with Newcastle because of VAR. So.
Yeah, I know. It was, and again, I know it's brought up that debate again. I can see you're shaking your head as we're talking. But yeah, it is. Well, I know they've sort of said whether there should be more trust in the linesman, like just to, you know, we do see it a lot and it's not going to be the last time that this happens. And there's been one or two situations before already. And yeah, you do wonder at what point they're going to shift that rule again, because again, we don't know the extent of Edison's injury, but if it suddenly comes out that he's out for months and months, for instance, then again, it's hugely costly for Man City. Like, hopefully it's not too bad. I don't think the news has come out yet exactly what he's done, but hopefully it's not too costly. But again, if it is, you can imagine that's just going to add extra pressure.
It is the EFL overview, starting in the Championship, where Angus Gunn was cleaning up anyone who dared venture his way in a very decent win for Norwich at Hull. A top-hand save from Regan Slater in the second half followed a strong-headed clearance in the first half, which actually floored Aaron Connolly and forced the Irish striker to be substituted. Carl Rushworth with good hands as Swansea left Birmingham with a point. Sarikia Dembele and Christian Bielik both denied in that one. And super Ben Hamer in goal. Unflappable against QPR for Watford. Good with the ball at his feet and excellent with his hands, his head, his chest, pretty much anything he could get in the way. Two huge saves at the very beginning and end of the second half. Sinclair Armstrong and Jimmy Dunn thwarted as the Hornets took all 3 points.
Yeah, well, I think we'll start there. He's certainly made an excellent name for himself with the Watford faithful since stepping in. They've had a great run. He's had a great run. Yeah, I thought he was brilliant in this game. As you say, there was just a little bit of everything. Obviously, it's always lovely when you cap it off with a massive save late on to claim the points as well. Brilliant save down low to his right. So sharp. And even where he was able to angle the ball, you had a player right next to him. If he parries into the area that you'd ordinarily say is a safe area, they would have scored. But he was able to get it away from him in the meantime. time. Good one-on-one save as well, very brave. And as you mentioned, some nice distribution in this one too. And I wanted to talk about the Angus Gunn one, because again, this came up on Ref Watch, and from memory, they were saying this should be a red card for dangerous play. But I've watched this, and I don't know, I guess again, this is because how we're taught as keepers. He's effectively come to head the ball as you would collect a cross, in that he's got his knee up for protection. It was almost like he went into autopilot, got his knee up, good head up, read it brilliantly, because it's a great ball from Ryan Allsop. If he doesn't come, the lad's through one-on-one, read it, headed it on the full, brilliant, brilliant goalkeeping. But I think because he had his knee up, they were suggesting that it could be dangerous play. But yeah, as I say, I suppose again, I'm seeing it from a goalkeeper's point of view. I just thought this was excellent goalkeeping, and the top hand save that he made, brilliant, brilliant save. When you see it from behind where it struck, he's so light on his feet, couple of quick steps, good explosion, technically perfect to get that top hand to it. I thought it was a top, top save. And lastly, Carl Rushworth, you mentioned where he had really good hands down low to his left, which was key. Tough ball to hold, but needed to hold it with people circling. But I actually really liked the saves he made thereafter. There was a really interesting one on the angle where I know personally I would have got drawn out. When you've got someone coming, bearing down on you on the angle, very, very tempting to leave your near post. And he was actually already out slightly, but he had the awareness to move back, make sure that he defended the space well, and then he's twisted and made the save on the follow-up. I just thought, and again, we speak about Brighton a lot. I know he's on loan at the moment. We speak about Brighton a lot in terms of how they work their goalies, train their goalies, educate their goalies. But I just thought it was really clever goalkeeping, really brave goalkeeping. Even when they're bearing down you on the angle, easy just to come out and spread and get bypassed, or they square it for a simple finish. But I thought his awareness in that moment was excellent.
You like your Ref Watch, don't you?
Do you know what? It's because I am living in my office as of now, and I have Sky Sports News on 24/7. I see the same stories and over again. And Ref Watch is actually one of the more interesting segments that they're doing at the moment. So I was actually fascinated to see it anyway on the James Trafford side of things, but of course they bring up all sorts and a few goalkeeper related things. So yeah, that has now become a particular favourite of mine.
Must be like Groundhog Day. There is some dross on there. I haven't watched that for a while, to be fair, because there is so much dross, isn't there? It's just people saying some words with no substance whatsoever.
But do you know what? Because I obviously wake up over here at like 7 a.m, which is about 3 a.m. in England. I put on Sky Sports News straight away to see the goals from the night before and to kind of catch up. But then you also have, I feel sorry, it's the same guys from different papers that come on every night between like 2 and 4 a.m. So every time it's always the same people talking about the headlines the next day. I feel like, wow, I do feel bad for him. That's your gig, you know, 2 a.m. every day to talk about the day's headlines. It must be tough.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to finish quickly on Ben Hamer, most saves per 90 in the Championship this season. That's from goalkeepers who have played 10 plus games. So that just shows the impact that he's had since coming in. And Valerian Ismail, the Watford manager, did indeed say after the game against QPR, everyone is starting to see why we took the decision with Ben. So yes, very good from Hamer so far. Into League One, penalty saves from Sol Brin and Ville Sinisalo. Brin in a win for Leyton Orient at league leaders Portsmouth, and Ville in a chill at Blackpool as Exeter fell 2-0 to the Tangerines. Ashley Maynard Brewer with another double save. He seems to be making a habit of these lately, but again to no avail. Ricky J. Jones and Joel Randall kept out in a mad few seconds as Charlton eventually went an eighth game without a win. Jay Lynch with what I think was actually an excellent save in tipping Jack Lancaster's effort onto the bar and then gleefully collecting the rebound. Fleetwood, however, falling to another defeat and remaining rooted at the bottom of the table, where 5 places and 10 points above them sit Burton. Max Crocombe continuing his solid form in a Derby defeat to Derby. But the story here is more about what's been happening in the opposition net of late, Richard. So riddle me this. Derby were 9 games unbeaten in the league coming up to the end of December. That was the final game of the year. It was 8 wins in that time too. That record came to an end live on Sky Sports at home to Peterborough on New Year's Day. As a result, Paul Warne replaces Joe Wildsmith with Josh Vickers. Derby then win the next two, and Vickers now looks set to keep his place in the team.
Yeah, which I can imagine if you're Joe Wildsmith. And unless there's something else going on here, whether there's an injury that we don't know about, and, you know, I've had that before where then they'd have put me on the bench, but I'm not 100%, but if I'm needed, I'm there type of thing. I don't know if it's something like that. It might not be, but yeah, you'd feel so hard done by if you've had such a great run and like one game could then change everything. But we do see it, and, you know, managers can be a little bit rash, a little bit emotional at times and make decisions like that. But yeah, certainly if I'm in Joe Wildsmith's shoes, then I'm, yeah, not overly happy about the situation. But you mentioned a few of the saves there. Another big well done to Ashmeyna Brewer. I mean, they're struggling, Charlton. I've watched quite a lot of their games recently, but brilliant double save. Loved the celebration as well. First save with his foot, got back quickly, very quick save, very sharp save to his left, and then I think the follow-up hits like the inside of the post as well. It's that nice moment when it then goes to safety, and you can see just how happy he was. Max Crocombe, two excellent saves with his feet. I just love how simple he made this look, in that they were both legitimately full foot saves in terms of where they were struck. And, you know, he made a good save, got up very quickly, got across, and made a very similar save. I think one with his right, one with his left. Again, just made it look so easy. And lastly, as you mentioned, Jay Lynch, excellent. Definitely made the save here. As you say, you can't see overly clearly on the screen, but if he doesn't get a touch, that nestles in the top corner.
And finally, in League Two, where Nick Townsend, not mentioned him for a while either, was feeling five alive in an away triumph for Newport at Doncaster. Joe Ironside, Billy Waters and Luke Molyneux all kept out there. One with an instinctive elbow by Townsend in three of the five saves made by the Solihull-born stopper. Crawley's Corey Adai, meanwhile, will take those five saves, double them, and then add another, as he did everything in his powers to send Salford home with just a point. Unfortunately for him, they did make it three when Kelly and Mai's Spornish strike wins that particular award this week.
Yeah, felt for Corey Adai. A couple of excellent saves in here, a couple of really good spread saves. And as you mentioned, one unfortunately did lead to a goal, but nothing he could do there. But I thought the save, full stretch to his left, full stretch to his right, very, very good. Of course, what is he, 6'6", 6'7". So yeah, took every inch of that frame in order to make both of those saves. And Nick Townsend, I love the save that he made effectively with his elbow. And this is where we talk a lot about goalkeeping not being black and white. A lot of the time it's not textbook. You know, you can look at a lot of the different techniques, but sometimes you do just need to manufacture a way to make a save. And I thought the save he made with his elbow close in, realized he couldn't get his hands to it, so just lifted his arm, got enough of an elbow to it, flew up over the bar. Top save. Clean Sheet Club. Okay, as we near the end of the show, it is time for this. And we start in the Premier League. Georgie Petrovic, tally double. Jordan Pickford, branded lemonade. Emi Martinez, branded fruity drink. Into the Championship. Ilya Melier, back with a blank. Freddie Woodman, first clean and first win since early September. Dan Iverson, on the board for 23-24. Gavin Batsunu, ever present. Into League One, Dan Grimshaw, happy birthday to him. Sol Brin, one off a siren. Tate Ashby-Hammond, impeccable. And into League Two, Alex Cairns, keeping out Crawley. Nick Townsend, City start. James Belshaw, account open for the Sulphurites. And Arthur Okonkwo, creeping up.
Very nice, Richard. More zen, that Clean Sheet Club, I thought.
Yeah, had a little bit more energy this week. What was the whole branded lemonade, branded fruity drink thing?
Okay, so it's 7-Up for Jordan Pickford. Ah. And Emi Martinez is feeling five alive.
Right, okay. I mean, if I hadn't have asked that, nobody would have known what you were talking about there. So I'm glad that I did.
The table, Richard. Top of the pile with 12 apiece. Our two goalkeepers now tied at the top. Alex Palmer and Will Norris, both in 27 games. And underneath them with 11 apiece are Nathan Baxter. He's managed it in 24 and Dan Grimshaw in 27.
Well, there you go. It is heating up, my friend.
Just to quickly touch on the FA Cup replays last night. A couple of good performances. Nathan Baxter playing well for Bolton. A really good double save in what was a defeat to Luton. Tim Krul scampering back and actually running backwards, not forwards, to make sure that he saved himself some embarrassment with a 40-odd yard lob that Adebayo attempted for Bolton. But I think the biggest story was Max O'Leary of Bristol City with a save in the second half from Thomas Suchek. Also, a lovely interception leading to the goal early on. He got a really good connection with this and ended up playing quite a nice ball that was then intercepted for the winner, scored by Bristol City. But the save in that second half from Thomas Suchek, very decent.
Yeah, top save and a massive win for them, and certainly doing very well actually lately, Bristol City. And certainly Max O'Leary seems to have slotted in quite nicely with the new manager's style of play. So a huge well done to him. GQ
GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way.
Yes, more movers and shakers in the January transfer window, and they are... a couple of unattached goalkeepers to begin with. Matt Macey finally is back in professional football. He has moved to Portsmouth on a short-term deal until the end of the season. Sam Walker also into Bradford on a short-term deal until the end of the season. Macey going into Portsmouth has allowed Josh Uluayemi to head out to FC Lahti for an undisclosed fee. And then three other permanent deals have seen James Belshaw move from Bristol Rovers to Harrogate, Jack Bycroft from Southampton to Swindon, and Harry Lewis from Bradford to Carlisle. And then a bunch of loans until the end of the season. Luca Ashby-Hammond from Fulham to Notts County, Jamie Cumming from Chelsea to Oxford, Tommy Simkin from Stoke to Forest Green Rovers, Eddie Beach from Chelsea to Gateshead, and Louis Morden from Wolves to Northampton.
Some interesting moves there. I think Sam Walker, you might correct me if I'm wrong, but I know he's been at Charlton recently. I don't know whether he'd left Charlton, but I think it might be from Charlton to Bradford. But a good opportunity for him to get some game time. Several others there of note, of course, Jamie Cumming. Haven't seen him for the first half of the season, but plenty of League One games behind him, so I'm sure he'll be very good for Oxford. Interesting move for Harry Lewis, of course, going from Bradford, stepping up a table. Be quite a fight, though, to keep Carlisle in the league. I know they're quite a few points adrift. What has been interesting, actually, to this point, and you've mentioned all of those moves there, very, very little has happened in the Premier League or Championship. In fact, I think now, you might again, correct me if I'm wrong, don't think anything's happened in the Premier League at all to this point. I think something will. And in the Championship, I think we've only seen three. I think the latter Hull, Beadle to Sheffield Wednesday, and Everson to Stoke. But I think that's about it. So to get to this stage in the window and have so little happen in the Premier League and Championship, very, very unusual.
Mm. Sam Walker, no, he was at Charlton, yes, but he was on a short-term deal and that had expired. So technically, he was a free agent.
Okay, all right, I will stand corrected.
You can try and test me, Richard, it's fine. Sometimes I will be wrong, absolutely. Before we go, we should just give our congratulations to Edison and Mary Earps, who have both been named the FIFA Best Goalkeeper for Men and Women. Although, as was the case last season, I think, Thibaut Courtois was in the FIFA Best Team. So Edison named FIFA Best Goalkeeper, but Thibaut Courtois named in the Best Team as the goalkeeper. So quite strange, really.
Doesn't really make sense at all, no.
No. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers
Away!